So I think we should remind people that if they have questions, they can email them to me at jpeterson@masswaterworks.org, or you can use the chat function if you're on a computer and submit your questions through chat.
Great. And Jen, thank you again for hosting this call. I have a couple of updates, and then I know we've gotten a couple of questions between now and the last time. I think we're joined again this time by Jane Downing of EPA. I might ask Jane to unmute herself and see if there's anything she'd like to offer from the federal perspective before I dive into some of my state updates. Jane, if you're on the line and would like to do that, this would be a good time.
Okay, great, Commissioner. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, thank you. So just a few thoughts. At the national level, we are having discussions to advocate for the water sector. In particular, we're talking to the Department of Health and Human Services to increase the priority for the water sector workers for access to PPE and testing. So hopefully something will come out of that. We're also talking to FEMA about the use of public assistance program funds to offset some of the costs to the COVID response. So I ask that everybody, you should keep checking on the EPA website, epa.gov coronavirus for drinking water and wastewater, and look for new information. We want to make sure that we're continuing the conversations and continue to advocate for some of the issues. On the website, you will also see an updated version of a particularly significant tool called Response on the Go. And that is an app that's available to water utilities to put on their phone. And it has a lot of information in there, including some of the FEMA funds, some of the forms that you have to fill out to try to get reimbursement. At the regional level, I think everybody knows that we're working really closely with all of the New England states. We have weekly calls. Recently, New York and New Jersey asked to join us, which was very interesting. And collectively, we're working on a whole lot of different guidance and tools, flushing guidance in particular, and looking into ways that we can all work remotely, including conducting sanitary surveys. So know that we're listening intently. If anybody has any issues, I know it will be worked on at the state level. You guys are doing a terrific job, but we're here in partnership and anxious to help out in any way we can. Thank you.
That's great, Jane. And that, you said there's a website to look at if people are interested in that response on the Go link. They could find more information on a website.
Correct. It's the epa.gov coronavirus/coronavirus drinking water and wastewater.
Great. And we'll try to capture that, maybe put that in our Q&A document. Terrific. So thank you for that, and thanks for being on the call. A couple of updates from us before we get to the questions, and the questions we've gotten already and the questions we may get as a result of this call. First, I'm not sure Mike Maynard had conflicting calls. I'm not sure he's on this call. He did have a couple of updates. If he's not on, I can provide them. Mike, were you able to join us? Yeah, it doesn't sound like he was. So we'll put this information, we'll make it available as well. But Mike wanted to report that the Board of Licensure has approved a revised policy for reviewing and issuing temporary emergency certifications The board chairman was authorized by the board to review and approve TECs as they're received pending CORI and SORB reviews by the Division of Professional Licensure. The chairman will report at each meeting how many TEC applications were received, how many were approved, and how many were denied. Following this streamlined approval, TECs will still need to have the CORI and SORBs reviewed and approved before they go into effect, but the board voted on these streamlined criteria to be applied to the review and approval of these applications. DPL is it let the board know that the division is developing procedures for reviews of applications remotely. They obviously have to make sure they're doing their best to protect personal information, such as social security numbers, telephones, and numbers and home addresses. But they're working on that. To further build on an available pool of potential replacements, the board at its April 1st, 2020 meeting developed an approach to recall operators who may have let their licenses lapse at the end of the last renewal cycle. The board voted to allow operators whose licenses lapsed on December 31st, 2019 to renew without having to meet the training contact hour requirements for licensure. Any operator who secures a renewal under this emergency provision will be required to bring their TCHs up to date by the end of the current renewal cycle, which is December 31st, 2021. DPL has made an effort to contact the operators with the lapsed licenses. I know Jen Peterson was on. I was on for a little while on the April 10th webinar that was set up to walk people through the licensing process, and they're going to continue to work on making sure that they if people want to renew their licenses, they will they'll keep working on that. So that's Mike Maynard's update. I've gotten, I'll say, from the DEP side, we've gotten a couple of questions in a couple of areas. Number one, priority testing. This was a question that came up first a couple of weeks ago, and it has come up again. Shouldn't water and wastewater operators and people that work in this field have priority testing available? We have taken this to the command center, which we are working to see if there's a way we can facilitate that. I'm hoping by the next time we're together, we will have more to say on that. But I want to acknowledge that we've heard the request. As it expands beyond first responders, which is where it started, to other essential workers, we agree that water and wastewater operators are essential workers who are providing a very important public health function in their communities and should be on the list. And so we will work on those topics. We will continue to update our questions and answers based, what we hear today and other information that we get. Things that are more timely, we'll try to push out to Jen Peterson through her MWWA blast list, as well as our own mailing list. But, we will be continuing to update our website. I will also note that Mass Waterworks sent us a letter just about 2 weeks ago. We are getting closer to having an answer to all the issues raised. Some of the issues in that letter are on our question and answer form. Others are things that we're working on the answer, and some of them are directly COVID related. Some of them relate to programs that timelines and issues like that are not simply limited to the Safe Drinking Water Act. And so we're working to provide as timely an answer as possible. In terms of the questions that we got, Jen forwarded it to us, they came in. Yeah.
Sorry, I'm told also that we need to remind people that the call is being recorded.
Oh,
just so that
excellent.
People are aware.
Excellent. Yeah, thank you for that. Thank you for that. That's important. I know when we all sign on, I think you hear a recorded voice saying that this call, you know, that this call is being recorded. But yeah, we try to observe that, and I blew right by that. So this is being recorded right now. And again, it's not only being recorded, so you know that it's being recorded, but we will make this recording available on the Mass DEP website as a reference for people that are interested. So thank you for that, Jen. So, you know, some of the first questions we got were related to financial issues. Are there any news or updates on how FEMA or MEMA may be handling reimbursement of costs if allowed? Other than what we have on our website, you know, I haven't gotten any additional guidance. I will work, you know, to get the most up-to-date information from the command center and MEMA. I think we posted on our website a link to a form that you would use to track your COVID-related costs. I think, Jane, I haven't had a chance to look at that response on the Go app that Jane Downing referenced from EPA. We'll take a look at that and make sure we're making, you know, that link available. But, you know, we will keep... We will provide the latest, but you know the first thing is keeping track of the COVID related costs is a good idea, you know, is essential, and we'll if there are any refinements in what we've already posted, or we get any better sense of what types of materials people will be looking at for reimbursements, we will share it with you, but we don't have anything right now. Secondly, will there be a stimulus package? What will be allowed and how will we apply for them? This is something that I have heard from several systems about, and you know, I appreciate that the systems are asking about this. As it's been pointed out to me, this is beyond just the costs of dealing with COVID. Some of you are looking ahead now to determine how this emergency and the dislocation that it's worked on the economy will be affecting your operations going forward. I've heard from systems that have reported that water use is down, that they're expecting that revenues will be affected as a result of any number of factors. And so, you know, I've heard that at the national level, there is a discussion. Some of the water advocacy groups, you know, the water agency advocacy groups have been working with Congress on you know, identifying this as a need to deal with the needs of, you know, systems that might, you know, might have impacts that, you know, are dealing with people that may have trouble paying their bills. You know, many of us remember after the economic recession of 2009, you know, there were a lot of, you know, the SRF related stimulus projects that were funded. I don't have a crystal ball on what Congress is working on right now. I know that, I'm aware that there are discussions about what the next stimulus package would look like. I am trying to engage with our secretariat, who in turn is working in the administration to make sure that we are being as complete as possible in identifying, you know, sectors where there are going to be issues that we need to be proactive on. I will try to get a better sense of that for the next time if I can. But, you know, again, I appreciate the fact that some of you are thinking ahead. I've, you know, had, you know, some discussions with Jen about this, you know, what are the types of information. I know some utilities in other sectors are, you know, if you're covered by the DPU, you know, some utilities are gathering information about how their accounts receivable and other metrics of their business are changing. We're still trying to work to figure out what's the best way to capture what the impacts are for you. And like I say, I hope we'll have more to say in you know, the upcoming sessions. So then moving from the financial, and this is one where I may open the floor to one or two of our regional people who I think have been dealing with at least some suppliers that are dealing with this issue. We got a question about sampling. And the questions are this: could DEP provide further clarification on its bacteria sampling guidance, particularly with respect to the use of alternative sample sites? In the FAQs, there's guidance on properly identifying the sample and notifying regional offices. When it comes to the use of spigots and hydrants, there's a mention of that location being considered a special sample first, and a routine sample is to be collected no earlier than 24 hours before the special sample. Is there an expected time frame when the follow-up sample should be taken? And for the follow-up sample, is it just the one sample being taken, or does the entire round need to be taken at the same time? It also sounds like we need approval of this outside sampling location before we resample. What will this approval look like? What is the expected time frame of approval from DEP? We're concerned with timelines for small systems that may require alternative sample sites or need subsequent resampling per the guidance. And along the same topic, can DEP clarify that if an alternative location is used but it is not an outside spigot or hydrant, that additional sampling is not required? So, in talking about the question this morning, that when we got it with Yvette DePisa, obviously we're going to make sure that we put this question and a very detailed answer up on our website. In the meantime, though, surveying the regions, I believe, if I'm correct, I think the central region may have dealt with some of these issues with some of the systems they've been working with. So I might ask either Marielle Stone or Bob Bostwick to unmute yourselves and maybe share some of the conversations you had with some of the systems that were looking at this issue.
Hi, this is Marielle. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hi, thank you, Commissioner. Central Region has gotten some inquiries about using alternate hydrant sites. We have been directing them to the guidance document. With regards to special samples, they need to be collected within 24 hours ahead of the routine sampling. So we've been providing that guidance as well, and that basically the approval you don't need any DEP approval ahead of time as long as we're operating under the state of emergency. We did get one question from someone that was using a hydrant for a emergency alternate location, and it was a dead end. We provided some additional guidance about the water supplier maybe wanting to take some HPC samples and also measuring the chlorine residual of this particular location just to kind of get some additional information to see if it could be problematic. So we provided that guidance as well. In terms of, doing the hydrants, again, we are trying to work with the systems on that. And, they can be used in as an alternative. And we just, again, are for the most part recommending that the guidance that we provided be followed.
Okay. And one thing I'll just call out, they said, is there, when they say that you're doing the special sample first and then the routine sampling thereafter, is there an expected time frame on when the follow-up sample should be taken? In other words, is there I know it can't be earlier than 24 hours. Any guidance you'd offer on that?
Yeah, at least 24 hours has to pass before the sample can be collected after the special sample. So the routine sample can be done after 24 hours.
Okay. All right. And, Yvette has been, Yvette DePisa in our Boston office is, in touch with each of the regional offices to make sure that we're getting a full compendium of, these types of issues related to these questions. And again, we want to make sure we're writing a detailed answer. Yvette, anything you'd want to add on to what Marielle said is that as far as we can go today?
Marty, this is Yvette. The only thing I want to add is that in the question, it looked as though the PWS indicated that it was a requirement to do the sample, the special sample for the evaluation. And I wanted it to be clear that it's not a requirement. The system is free to do whatever preparation they need to do, their flushing, their checking, and just take a routine sample. However, because we are being very cautious, we encourage systems to do that special sample evaluation beforehand, and the 24 hours separation is what we're looking for. And I would also encourage water systems to work with their regional offices, because sometimes your questions are like really specific to what you're doing, and the regions have all of the information to be helpful. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Thanks. And then I might keep you on the line here, for the second question. And again, we will develop a more comprehensive written question and answer. But we did get a question for lead and copper. With the recommendation to flush schools to mitigate lead and copper levels prior to reopening, how soon after reopening and flushing can the samples be conducted? Depending on when facilities are able to reopen, there may be a short time frame in quarter two to conduct their required sampling on top of flushing for schools. Additionally, if any of these locations that require quarter two lead and copper sampling reopen right before the end of quarter two, will there be flexibility on the reporting timelines? I realize, this may be a more detailed answer, but any of your preliminary reactions, would you like to offer here to the group?
Thank you, Marty. On the question of flushing of the schools, we are recommending that the flushing occurs before the schools start up, and that you still have to observe the 8 to 18 hours of stagnation before collecting the lead sample. So yes, you can do the flushing, but you definitely have to do the 8 to 18 hours stagnation period. And in this case, we again recommending that you work with your regional office. There was a second part to the question that asked about deadlines. And as you know, for both federal and state required deadlines, if you miss them, yes, it's still a violation that we have to note, but we are working on enforcement for discretion related to follow-up activities based on the fact that you had to miss the sample or the report submission because of COVID-19. And we are working on a format for submitting documentation for any non-compliance that occurs due to COVID-19, so that we can have that documentation and use it for consideration of enforcement discretion.
Okay, thanks, Yvette. I think that's the the questions we got in advance. Jen, I don't know if things have been coming in that you folks want to raise.
So I think we might have covered this in an earlier call, but the question comes about testing a supply for COVID-19. This particular public water system is getting questions from the city officials about testing the drinking water.
Yeah, I thought the answer was that, and we can double check this. I'm trying to pull up our questions and answers, but
I think Damon is unmuted.
Yeah, Marty, I'm on the call. We
you
did
are
answer
on the call
before. There's no test in drinking water that we're aware of for COVID-19.
Right.
Okay. The next question, does DEP have a national grid liaison or primary contact for when we have a power emergency? We're a small public water system and lost power 23 hours ago, but can't get any priority or commitment from National Grid. They are treating us like a single customer being out of power, but we will run out of backup power supplies at some point. There seems to be no supervisor we can contact.
Okay. Can I ask if whoever that is, if they wouldn't mind emailing me at martin.suberg, S-U-U-B-E-R-G, at mass.gov. I will try to, you know, get, you know, into the MEMA, you know, MEMA system where these things get, you know, hopefully, you know, addressed. So if you could, again, it's martin.suberg, S-U-U-B-E-R-G, at mass.gov, and I'll do my best to follow up with you.
And I've sent that person your email as well. So the next question, maybe just a statement, actually. I would ask that if and when priority testing becomes available, that licensed backflow testers and surveyors also be included. The nature of testing puts us in front of a varied and large group of folks daily.
Okay. Backflow testers and surveyors. Okay, we'll make sure that we are, you know, and that our definition would include those people.
Okay, that's all the questions that we have via chat and email right now.
Okay, should we try to open up the line for any questions? Again, I think it's *6 to unmute yourself. So if anybody would like to unmute themselves and ask, we'll do our best to answer. Okay. Sounds to me like we don't have any volunteers, but we still do have some homework assignments here at MassDEP that we will be following up on. Updating our website, hopefully having some more information for you on some of the fiscal issues that people have highlighted as questions for our next meeting. And again, you know, if we're finding that information is time sensitive, we'll find ways to push it out before that meeting or push it out before we have a formal question and answer up on our webpage. But we'll continue to update in all of those ways.
So there aren't any more questions coming in. As the commissioner said, if you have a question that you're not able to send via email or chat, you can hit *6 to unmute yourself. Mike Knox.
Yes, thank you, Jen. Just as a follow-up on one of the other conferences that we had, is there an update on the survey that MassDEP had implemented requesting information as to whether operators were willing to provide services to fulfill staffing shortages?
Really good question. We did push out a survey. Is Kathy Baskin on the line? Do you have an update on how many responses we've gotten and what we've been able to do with the information we've collected?
So far, we had 41 responses, 24 of which seemed to have enough information for us to pursue or start matchmaking if areas, you know, if public water suppliers are looking for information. I would say the split between public or drinking water and wastewater was like 21 folks on the drinking water side, 3 on the wastewater side, and we're pursuing the last 17 that didn't have enough information to make them yet a meaningful contact. So we have information about what type of license these people have, what type, where in the Commonwealth they would like to assist, which DEP region, and we can push that out either online or through, or directly to a public water supplier. So there's anybody who's interested in that information, They can contact Yvette DePisa or me, and we can provide that.
Well, we have, I think it would be good to get it into Mike's hands. And again, if you feel like it's processed enough, maybe we can talk after this call, Kathy, about seeing if we can get it up on our website, recognizing that, you know, we may be updating it even as, you know, more people hopefully respond.
Yes, we will definitely get it on the website and we'll coordinate with Mike.
Thank you.
Anyone else have a question for the commissioner?
Hi, Jen. This is Yvette. I have a question that came in to us that I think might be useful to raise here. It was a question on sampling at spigot or hydrant locations for disinfection byproducts for the DBP rule. The answer is yes to that question. And water suppliers should just follow up with their regions regarding use of an outside spigot for disinfection byproduct sampling.
Okay, thanks.
Commissioner, I might add on the issue of the temporary emergency certifications that the Board of Certification has developed the criteria for. I believe we heard that fee could be waived now. So although you do still have to get all of the required information, and it may take a bit of time to get through that process, at least that fee seems to have been waived, as has the late fee for renewal.
That's right, Jen. Thank you for reminding us. Yeah, that was sort of late breaking news last week. And I think, you know, that's a good reminder that for the TECs, I think the fee is waived. And as you noted, the late fee is waived for the license renewals.
Right.
And again, they're offering more flexibility with the TCH for people that are renewing their licenses during this period.
And I know there's been some questions. Right now, the best way to get in touch with the Board of Certification is to email drinkingwaterboard@mass.gov. They made that clear on the phone, the webinar the other day as well. So if you have specific Board of Certification questions, drinkingwaterboard@mass.gov is the best way to put those questions forward. All right, with that, I don't see any other questions that have come in, so I think we can conclude the call for today.
Okay, well, terrific. You know, thank you again to everybody for participating, and more importantly, thank you for, you know, the work you're doing in this really difficult time to make sure that we all have clean water, clean and reliable water. So we'll stay in touch. We'll keep updating, and hope that our next call we'll have some follow-up on some of the issues raised today.
Great. And the call next week, we will send out the information. It will be Tuesday at 2. So look for your email for the call-in information.
Okay. Thanks again.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.